listening to the School Success Formula with me, Lucy Parsons. This is episode number 20. Can you believe that we have got to 20 episodes of the Exam Success Formula? Well, actually, it's episode number 21 because I made the silly mistake of starting the episode numbers at zero because I had an introductory episode right at the beginning, which I numbered as zero. So this is actually episode number 21. But if you've been here since the beginning, I just want to thank you so much for listening and tuning in every week. And if you're a new listener, I really hope you're gaining benefit from listening to the podcast. It would be amazing if you could tell just one friend about the podcast to help spread the word and enable it to help more and more people across the country to make the most of their education and to help more parents successfully support their children through their education. Okay, on today's episode, I have got Alex Webb, and Alex Webb runs a company called Flying Start XP, and they help young people make the transition from education into the workplace, and they run lots of great courses to help young people develop the skills that they need that they're not necessarily taught in the educational environment but are highly prized in the workplace. So it's a fascinating interview and you will really, really enjoy it. I'll take you over to the interview right now. Welcome to the School Success Formula, Alex Webb.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, so good to have you here. Now, the first question I'm desperate to ask you is that I know you've worked with one of the dragons from Dragon's Den. Which one was it and what was it like to work with them?
His name is Doug Richard. He's an American gentleman and he was in the first two series. So those watching it now probably won't have seen him. Mm-hmm. Great fun working for him. Knows what he wants, very, very direct, but gives great advice, especially for startups. And that's how I was working with him. I helped build his business called School for Startups.
Okay.
Great fun.
How did you get to work with a dragon like you? How does that work?
As with anything, which is actually a really good point to make, is about networks. Okay. I've moved around different industries, and just before I went on maternity leave for my first son, mm-hmm. I was working as an events director for a large experiential marketing agency, mm-hmm. and it was one of my connections from there who left to set up her own business, met Doug because he was helping to mentor her business, and when she heard that he needed some additional sort of event and content development support, she called me knowing I was on maternity and possibly looking for my next adventure. So that's how I got involved.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds amazing. And that point about networks, I interviewed somebody else called Barry Jackson in episode 3 of the podcast, and he talked quite a lot about networks and how teenagers can start to develop their networks. So if you're interested, then hop back and listen to that. Okay, well, thank you for sharing with us how you came to work with a dragon. Not many people can say that. Okay, you've had such a wide range of experiences across education and business. So what are the key skills that young people need to thrive in the workplace that they're not currently being taught in school?
I think the biggest thing I see now working with students and graduates is their self-awareness, mm-hmm. their understanding of what their strengths and their areas of development are, and how to therefore communicate correctly, or not correctly, but in a positive way with other people. So we do a lot of work about understanding self, so using psychometric testing,
okay.
and to understand who I am as an individual. And then you can see why you find some conversations or some relationships difficult, mm-hmm. Or easy. And we see real light bulb moments going off with the students we work with, because what they then discover is when they do get into the world of work, they understand that someone who is, we use colours, so if someone's quite blue, they're quite analytical, they like their numbers, they like things done in a set way, and they like detail when you're talking to them.
Yeah.
If someone's red, they like big picture. They don't really need the detail. So if you are a detailed person and you speak to a red and they're really sitting there going, just be quiet, I just want to know the top line.
Yeah.
That's where relationships can break down. So self-awareness is something that I think is really, really important and something that you can learn as you go. You will pick it up, but having a greater understanding using a psychometric testing like that is really key. And I think the other thing is confidence when communicating. It's just practice articulating sentences and the right words and how to write emails and how to be a little bit more fuller in some of your answers that you give, but not too full that you start to waffle. And it's that real balance, and it's just practice. So some self-awareness and confidence in communication are probably my two key areas.
Yeah, like that whole waffling thing. I remember when I had my my interview for my first job. So I worked for Tesco.com in their head office as my kind of on a graduate scheme. And I remember being interviewed, and they have those competency questions. And it was like, tell me about a time when you had to manage your time. And you'd start like telling them about this time, and they'd be writing and they'd be writing, and they don't look up and look at you. And so you're not getting the signal about when to stop talking. And I think it's just about having that kind of self-awareness. Like, I have told this story now. I've said enough. I just need to be quiet. Yeah,
we have a great tool, actually. One of the courses that we run is called Interviewing with Impact. And we have a great tool that helps you stop talking and stop waffling. It gives you a process to work through to tell your story concisely.
Fantastic. So are there any tips that you can share with us about that, about how to share your story?
Well, I give you the technique, which is called the STAR technique.
Okay.
The S is for situation.
Yeah.
The T is for task.
Yeah.
A is for action, and R is for results. So, okay. For example, you will say, tell me a time when you have shown good communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
So you would say S. So the situation was...
Yeah.
Let's say the situation was I was on my D of E,
yes,
of course, with a group of my peers. Mm-hmm. The task. So then you say, right, my task. The thing. The task was we had to get across a lake in the shortest amount of time.
Okay.
The action. So what was my action? Well, my action was I gave clear, concise instructions to my team, because I was the team leader, mm-hmm. to allow them to know who was rowing and in what rhythm.
Okay.
Result. The result was we were very successful. We sped up. We kept our speed. Therefore, my communication allowed us to get across the river the fastest.
Brilliant.
A lot of the time you hear them tell me what the situation or the task was, but they don't tell me what their full action was, and they forget the result. And I always have to ask extra questions when, you know, interviewing with them to find that result out.
So if you and can give... would that mark somebody down in an interview situation if you had to ask extra questions to get the information that you're looking for because they're not communicating fully with you? Or is that just an indicator of the kind of level that they're at in terms of their communication ready for the workplace?
I think it wouldn't mark them down, but it would get them noticed and mark them up if they were good at getting clear, concise evidence of skills and competency skills like that. And it's all about practice.
Yes.
So if you practice and you have and you've looked at the evidence for all the different competency skills or skills and requirements of that course at university or that job interview, you can then train and practice those before you go in. So as soon as the interviewer asks a question, you can put two or three examples in and be really succinct.
Well, that's brilliant. That really reminds me of a kind of essay structure. So if you're looking at like a paragraph in an essay where you make it, a student that I'm working with told me that her teacher uses this, and I've used something similar with students as well, is you make your point, you have your evidence, and then you have your explanation. So it's the PEE. And it's following that structure that gives you tight, finely tuned paragraphs all the way through your essay. And it takes practice to be able to do that. You have to practice writing essays. And what you're saying is, you know, this STAR technique, it gives you everything that you need to say within that interview situation, but if you follow and practice that formula, then you're going to get really, really good at it.
Yeah, really good, really good example. Absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so we've talked about communication. What else are students not being taught at school that they need to have to thrive in the workplace?
Understanding of business.
Okay.
It's probably the biggest thing that that we chat about or see when so we run workshops for students coming out of school, but also those coming out of graduation. So they've just graduated from university. They are unaware of, one, how a business works. So in terms of organogram or structure of a business, who reports into who, the different departments. So that they, if they're aware of that a little bit more, they understand the flow of a business and how most business, well, all businesses really are customer centric. They also to understand the commercial aspects of business, i.e. how do they make their money, therefore how do they pay you,
yes,
and what is your role in that cog, that wheel, make them more successful. So if you can't add value to a company, then why would they employ you? So it's a real, we have a lot of conversations about what are my values, therefore what company should I therefore go and work for, because it'd be great to have a match. So I'll tell you about this lad who came on one of our workshops. His father had been pushing him into finance because that was the world he knew and he was in. And he managed to get him an internship at JP Morgan, and everyone thought, brilliant, this is really good, you must be so excited. Now this lad, I'm going to call him Sid, just for and Sid went and worked for JP Morgan for a month, absolutely hated it, and we met him just after he'd left. He was very, very down in the dumps about work. He came on our course, and what he then actually, he got the self-awareness of what he was really good at. He, but the more important, he got the confidence to say to his dad, Dad, I don't want to go into finance. This isn't me. It doesn't fit my values and my strengths, but I now know where I am going to go. And he went into real estate, and he's absolutely thriving there now.
Brilliant.
So the main thing about, you know, something that school doesn't teach you is what are my values and why is that important for business? And also understanding how businesses run, so you can then be proactive as soon as you go into a business, therefore adding value. And that's the most important thing commercially.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I remember when I was working at Tesco, a friend came to me who came in on the graduate scheme the same as I did, and we were probably about 2 years in at this stage, and he's like, I really need a pay rise. And I was like, okay. And he said, I just need to have a meeting with the boss and say, you know, I need some more money because I need to buy a car or buy a house. I can't remember exactly. It's a long time ago now. And I said, well, you can't go to them and say, I need a pay rise because I need the money for my life. You need to go to them and give them a business reason why you need a pay rise. And my strategy when I was at Tesco was I would ask for more work. I say, oh, this thing's coming up, I'll do that for you. And I take it on and I do it for like 8 weeks, and I do it really, really well, and everybody would know how I was doing. And then I go and say, look, I've taken this on, I'm doing it really well, I deserve a pay rise because I'm contributing to the business in this way. And it worked every single time.
There's another acronym, which, and I won't go through it because it's a bit more complex, but it's about having complex or difficult conversations, and asking for a pay rise is one of the examples that we use. So it's just about, you know, showing them what the benefits you bring to the business and the consequences of your work. So it's a really good way. So just as your example says, you know, show them the value you give.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll go back to about my time at Tesco was I worked there for 3 years, and probably for about the last 18 months I was there, I was actually really, really miserable. And it was because it didn't align with my values. And it was a really, really important thing to recognise that working for that business wasn't going to, you know, satisfy me, because it wasn't delivering something that I truly, truly believed in. You know, I grew up on a farm, and actually the tension between the big supermarkets and farmers is enormous. And those two sides of my personality, you know, and experience, they just didn't fit together. So I set off on a completely different path and ended up in education, kind of the opposite, I think, to what you did, Alex.
Yes, I did, absolutely. But now I'm going back to it. So,
oh, yeah. Okay, so what about university? Do you think the skills are similar or different there, that students learn there are different to the workplace? And how does university kind of feed into actually getting a job?
Okay, a few questions there. I think university and work, going straight into the workplace, different people, they want, you know, different needs, different environments they thrive better in. What I will say, I did go the university route. And what I learned at university was how different people from different backgrounds therefore have different opinions. Mm-hmm. And if everybody around you has got different opinions, you start to question your own. Yes. Which is a really healthy way to grow and develop. I think, but then I also had another friend of mine who went straight into business and was excelling incredibly quickly by the time I left university. And I mean, I went to university because I wanted to go into teaching. So I needed a qualification. Yeah. To do that. So I was kind of very driven in the outcomes of my university education. Those of mine who've gone into business straight away did have done very, very well, but they were a very social, confident people. So university does force you into possibly situations of different people, which you're not initially used to because you've always been surrounded by your closed networks.
Yes.
University provides you with a lot more open networks, which is in one way for business is even now I'm calling on my old university friends who are now in so many different careers.
Yeah.
I've got my own business. I'm calling on them. They are my open networks. And they allow me to have so many different conversations or access to so many different companies because of those open networks. Now, that could have happened if I was at university or went straight into work. But university has, I think, given me a broader open network.
Yeah, it's about creating that network, as you say, that group of people that you can reach out to, that you've got some relationship with. And you know, it's one of the things that I think people resent when they haven't been to university, particularly, you know, I talk a lot about going to Oxford and Cambridge, and a lot of people resent people who've been to Oxford and Cambridge because of that network that people develop when they go. But I think if you recognise that you're going to get that particular benefit from going, and, you know, there were some people when I was at university at Cambridge, and I look back now and I can see how hard they were networking even then, so that they would have that network at this, you know, 20 years later, and it's paying dividends now. And I think that's, you know, if you can go to university thinking that you want to be meeting the future movers and shakers of your generation, that's a really, really positive way to get a lot out of that experience, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And but also on the flip side is, if you don't go to university and you're aware that that's what you need, as well as the education element that university provides you, there are so many different ways to increase your networks, by going to conferences, by going to Google meetups, by, you know, joining different clubs or societies where you will have different points of view. So, you know, just because you're not going to university, there are other ways of generating that and increasing your open networks.
So basically what you're saying, whether you go straight into a job or whether you go to university, it's the things that you're doing around the edge of your job or your studying that are the things that create these networks and create these opportunities.
I think so. And obviously, unless you are going to university, do you have to get a specific qualification?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think networking for me has been the way I've moved from pillar to post. So it's served me incredibly well.
Fantastic. And I just want to throw in there as well, because I sometimes talk about how I was headhunted for my first job. And, you know, I went to Tesco because they got in touch with me and said, will you come and work with us? I went through an interview process and everything. And that didn't happen to any of my other peers that were at Cambridge with me. And I think the reason that happened to me was because I was the treasurer of the Cambridge Union Society. I was the treasurer of the University Geographical Association. And, you know, they saw that I was doing these things, they got that information from somewhere, and they thought, oh, she must have something about her to be getting herself into these positions within the university. And so they then approached me. So you're not just creating a network, but you're almost creating opportunity for yourself by doing those things and having those experiences.
Absolutely. And that's probably exactly why you were picked up, Lucy, by going out and going the extra mile, because people always talk to me now about it's the story you tell. So we just run some interviewing with impact workshops with some year 13s. And those people who have gone off over the summer holidays and got work experience or volunteer work, they have so many more stories to tell. So they stand out more. And if you stand out in an interview or stand out on, you know, if people are looking through a list of experience of people that are possible people for their company, the great stories are things they're going to remember, and that's what's going to get you noticed, and therefore that's what's going to get you employed.
Yeah, and this is exactly what I tell people about when I'm helping them with personal statements for university is, you know, you need these wide variety of experiences, but you also need to put your personal spin on those experiences to get yourself noticed and to really stand out. And that's what I help people with in my I've got a course on how to write your personal statement, and I really help them to kind of deep dive on you know, what it is they want to say about the things that they've done to really help them to stand out. Okay, so that's fantastic. Can you talk a bit about before we started recording, you mentioned the differences between university and apprenticeships and all that kind of thing. Can you talk about the differences between, like, why you should be choosing one over the other and that kind of thing?
I will give you my my story from the information I've been gleaming from the last 6 months, because it's been on the tip of many companies' tongues. Because recently, I don't know if your listeners know that there is now an apprenticeship levy. So every company that raises or has a certain amount of money they put into payroll, they have to put a percentage of that into this levy, which means that levy is paid to run apprenticeship courses. So there are so many more apprenticeship courses happening at the moment, which is why a lot of parents I speak to say, oh no, what do I do? You know, do they go apprenticeship? Do they go university route? But the conversation I've had recently, which really stood out, was the difference between going to university and then the degree apprenticeship. So we talk about, they talked about social equity. And this was highlighting that those people who are constantly surrounded throughout their lives, their parents went to university possibly, or school is always saying, you know, when you go to university, or what are you going to study, or when you, they were always talking about university. So you grow up thinking, well, I'm going to go to university. That's what I do. So it's not as big a discussion when you get there, because you know that's your route. But those people who are possibly first-time generation going to university, or they don't have a real passion about a subject, or they're just not sure what they want to do, and do I go to university for university's sake? And I think since, obviously, with it becoming a lot more expensive to go to university, and the debt now that students are leaving university with, the degree apprenticeship seems like a really good option too, because you can show your excellence in your education or academic area, but you're also working to get there. One thing they talked about was those who have the social equity of, he put it into Star Wars terms, so Prince Leia, who's always been surrounded by money and glad, you know, and just able to, she has that more, a better lifestyle, as I'll put it. So she would know that she was going to university and not question it. And the return on investment for her for university would be around 30 years.
Okay.
Now, someone like Luke Skywalker, who's had to work on a farm, subsistence farmer, and working really, really hard to get where he needs to go, he wouldn't be expecting to go to university. But he wants to make a better life for himself. So this guy was saying, actually, for him, a degree apprenticeship could be better, because his return on investment, he would expect that to happen within 5 to 10 years. So, which makes complete sense. So it's there aren't as many degree apprenticeships going on at the moment because the demand's not there. Okay. So the key thing with
the
that
demand
was,
from business or the demand from students?
I think, do you know, I don't know, Lucy, on that one. There aren't, maybe there's just not many businesses offering it. I think that's probably,
that would be my guess, because I think it sounds very attractive as a student to be almost paid to and get a degree at the same time. I mean, why would you say no, really?
And I think the thing that this guy was saying, who was presenting this this data to us, said, you know, university can be seen as first choice for many, but the degree apprenticeship should be seen as first choice for many as well, but second choice for all. So it was trying not to look at degree apprenticeships as the sort of poor second cousin.
Yeah.
It was still a really, really good first choice.
Okay, so what you're saying is it really depends what background you're coming from as to which would be the thing that kind of gives the payback that you're looking for. Is that what you're saying?
That was what the statistics for this company highlighted, that in terms of the way you think, you don't feel that you have there's only one route. So it wasn't, I mean, it did work. That's what they looked at, what was stopping people going to university. And they looked at different backgrounds, different postcodes, all of those kind of bits of information came in to kind of find this bit of research.
Okay, fantastic. That kind of gives parents and students a kind of different way of looking at, the investment of time and money into a university education and what else is out there and kind of the payback time. But I suppose the thing I would caveat that with is, the payback time is the average across the population, isn't it? And if you are exceptional and you push yourself and you're very driven, you're going to get payback much, much faster than the average.
And that works whether you go to university or whether you go straight through. It's about that being proactive, about being understanding business, being able to communicate with people, and having that confidence to excel.
So it's all those soft skills that you don't necessarily get taught in the classroom or in the lecture hall. Okay. So how can young people develop these skills that we're talking about, these soft skills, apart from taking part in one of your courses? Cheeky question.
It's getting experience. One of the courses, we ran an employability course for a school back in June, and we highlighted the importance of getting work experience, going out and volunteering, getting an internship, having all these experiences, and start listening to the way people talk. Sit in meetings, see what the team dynamics are in a meeting. Start understanding the kind of adaptability and flexibility you need to have to be successful in the workplace. And then we went back in October because we've just done an interviewing course with them. And apparently the increase in the amount of students who did work experience this summer for that age group had massively shot up, which was
Brilliant.
brilliant. And they all, when we came back to see them, they had so much more stories to tell. They understood it. They hadn't necessarily had to put a lot of it into practice yet. But they are started understanding that everybody is slightly different. And also what they started to do with work experience and volunteering is understood either that they really loved that type of work environment or they hated it. And I remember doing I did a work experience, or I went and helped my dad out. He was an accountant, in a summer holiday to earn a bit of money. I did a load of filing. I was in their office with surrounded by boxes, but the work environment there was very, very bland. It was pretty quiet. There was no colour. And that made me realise I don't thrive in an environment where there's no colour and sound and openness. So since then, I have never gone into the corporate route. I've always gone for kind of the SME, so small medium enterprise route, where there's you can allow to be a little bit more colourful in various ways within business. So work experience and volunteering can tell you so much about yourself, and you can see loads of different interactions. So that would be my real push, is go out and get it.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. And there's this quote from one of my kind of online mentors, Marie Forleo. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she says clarity comes through engagement, not thought. And what she actually means by that is go out and have the experiences. And if you think you want to work for JP Morgan or in finance or in accountancy, and if you go out and get that work experience, you'll soon find out, probably within a few days, whether it's right for you or whether it's wrong for you. If it's right, you can keep looking down that path. If it's wrong, you need to look elsewhere, but you're not going to find that out by sitting at home and just thinking about it, are you?
No, I love that quote. I'm going to use that one.
Brilliant. The other thing I was going to raise with you was, like you said about your summer job where your dad paid you to go and do the filing. I had a similar job where I was paid to photocopy deeds in the basement of a solicitor's office and get covered in dust. It was horrible. But you've mentioned work experience and volunteering, but you didn't talk about paid work and the exposure that can give you. Does paid work in the kind of junior role that a teenager is likely to be able to get give the same kind of exposure and engagement that as that a work experience or volunteering would give them?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a miss of me to miss that option, but definitely. But what I would say, with paid work or any work experience volunteering is if you know the type of career you want to go into, try and get the work experience or paid work in a field where you it can add that value and that story to your CV. So we have a great story about I think it was the president or the chair of the Chichester Performing Arts University.
Okay.
And he comes in and says to his new cohort or those who are doing an open day, now, if you tell me that you've got a job, that's great. I'll show, you know, it shows that you're out there and going after some work. But if I hear that you're in Tesco's, knowing that you want to go to performing arts schools, he said, I'd go down to Tesco's and tell them that you've racially abused me. And then he says to his group, so why would I do that? And he waits. And then the answer he's getting is, if you want to get into performing arts and you're serious about it, you should be getting jobs in a cinema, in a theatre, an old people's home, performing to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that association of the job that you want to do, hoping to go into, and that and the work and the paid work you get. So it's just that balance of trying to show that you know the kind of route you want to go. But if not, paid work at anything is going to give you insights.
Yeah, and this is exactly the advice that I give to students who I'm helping to get into university. You know, if you can get voluntary work experience or paid work that is connected with what you want to do, that's where you need to be focusing your attention. Other stuff, it's interesting, but only in as much as you can draw out the kind of key skills that the place you're applying to is looking for. So if you're applying to a business that wants you to be good at working in a team, what have you been good at in working as a team in your voluntary paid or work experience? You know, and it's those key skills that you're looking for. They're not particularly interested. You know, if you want to do a geography degree, they don't care if you've worked for Tesco at the checkout. You know, it's just not relevant, apart from the fact of what skills you've developed in doing that. But if you want to do a geography degree and you can get on a local conservation project, that's so much more interesting and so much better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so if a young person is interested in having a career in business, what's the best route to get there? And it'd be great if you could talk about the differences between being a solo entrepreneur or working for a small enterprise and working for a big business, you know, really huge.
So one thing I would be probably best to clarify is when we started talking about business, the students we work with just assumed we meant sort of Canary Wharf, finance, banking. And that's kind of what they had in their head of what business meant.
Yeah.
Actually, once we spoke to them and we asked them what they wanted to do, and some of them saying, I wanted to go into marine, but I want to be a marine biologist, and said, well, that you are going to a workplace. So we realized it's anywhere you go to a workplace is business. So that was kind of the first thing we needed to get across to them. In terms of going on being an entrepreneur or working for an SME, so that's a small, medium enterprise and a large organization, you are going to get three incredibly different experiences. Yeah. Now, a large business or corporate business has a lot of processes, a lot of ways that they do things because they have to. They've got to be efficient. Some obviously more efficient than others. But what you'll be probably employed for is one job, one tiny cog of that massive, massive wheel. So you'll be doing probably quite repetitive tasks, whether that's repetitive. I don't mean as in, your daily routine could be different, but every week you'd be having to do the same checks or the same data analysis.
You're very specialist, basically, aren't you?
That's a great wording. Thank you. So you have to become quite specialist. And I know with graduate programs within large organizations, you do get the opportunity to obviously move around so you can see which specialist role fits your skills the best. Going into a small medium enterprise, so that could be anywhere up to sort of 150, 200 people, a bit larger as well, down to, you know, 5 people.
Yeah.
You are going to get exposed to so much more a lot quicker.
Yes.
So if you're not sure whether you want to be in the, you know, sort of creative or new development or business development or production management or concept development or any of that, you know, any of the so many exciting roles that there are in business. Mm-hmm. If you go into an SME, you will get exposed to a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Going into it, going solo straight away, becoming an entrepreneur. Now, I know people do it, and I know it's possible. But one thing I always say when I'm speaking to sort of, young adults about that's what they want to do is, you know, I would really thoroughly suggest, advise you go into, it doesn't have to be a corporate, just go into business.
Yeah.
See how it's run. See, I learned a lot from my early managers, some of whom I thought I really want to emulate that, and others I thought, oh my gosh, as soon as I have my team, I am not going to speak to them or work with them as this person has done for me. So you learn and you find your way and you find who you are in business and you take bits from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important. And I remember when I was working with in one startup and we were in a place called Impact Hub. Now, there's quite a few Impact Hubs in the UK, which is kind of a central working place for SME, small sort of startup companies to work. So you may have 100 different companies in one working space. So you do a lot of collaboration or a lot of networking.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of startups in there who were fresh out of university, had a great idea and had a bit of capital behind them, but they just didn't understand how they made so many mistakes on how to grow their business. Because one, they didn't have as much networks.
Yeah.
They didn't have the business know-how of profit and loss and finance. And it was just, I just kind of thought you've got a great idea, but you don't have the experience of business to be able to pull this off.
No.
And a lot of people failed. So going solo was great. But go and get some experience first. It would be my advice.
I would definitely second that. Having worked, you know, in a mega business, Tesco, and then in schools, which are more like kind of small, medium enterprises, and then doing this on my own, you know, this is by far the hardest way I've ever earned any money.
Yeah.
Doing it on my own, because I'm not, well, I have to be specialist in the skills that I'm selling, you know, my knowledge and all that kind of thing. But I also have to be a generalist in dealing with the accounts and the tax and all the IT systems and everything. I have to know everything that is going on all the time. And, you know, compare that to when I was working at Tesco and, you know, I felt such a long way from the customer, you know, just by the fact that I was so specialist in what I was doing. It's just such a different experience. And I think you need to get that breadth of experience in order to be able to work for yourself and it like become successful at any point in the next 5 years. And B, you know, it just gives you that foundation, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's opening more networks. So, you know, work at the initial stages, I think, is a really good way to go.
Fantastic. Okay, you've used these phrases, open and closed networks, a lot. Can you just define for us what you mean by those?
Oh, I can. Sorry, it's become part of my common language now. closed networks, and this is a really good exercise for your listeners to do.
Okay.
So a closed network is people who are, you know, very well. You speak a common language, you have similar backgrounds, you have similar opinions. You are, you know, the people that you would call on in an hour of need, you trust them.
So it's like your close family, your very closest friends,
that
kind of people. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, close teachers, all those types of things. Now, your open network, I would probably just describe them more as sort of acquaintances or people who you may play in a netball team or a football team with,
mm-hmm.
or someone who's in your church choir or in an orchestra that you're in. People that you know, you say hi to. But they're not naturally in that closed network.
Yeah.
So a really good exercise to do is actually write down on one side of the paper your people in your closed network, list mm-hmm. them, and then start writing down everybody in your open network. And what you'll find is you have a lot more people in your open network than you think.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know exactly what everybody does?
Yeah.
If you can start asking questions about what they do, how did they get to where they got to, you will start to realize how many other doors could now become open to you.
Yeah.
So it's a really good, and you end up, when we end up doing it, we end up with these massive spider sort of webs of names. and different careers, because you suddenly realise that the person you've been playing in a football team with every Friday night is a, I don't know, a solicitor at a firm, and they need an apprentice. You know, if you don't have those conversations, you don't know what opportunities there are lying there.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I find with a lot of young people is that they just don't know how to talk, particularly to people who are older than them. So if you were playing on a football team, you might, that a young person might not know how to start that conversation to, you know, find out what opportunities this person might be able to give them. Have you got any advice for young people who are kind of a bit tongue-tied about building these relationships?
I do, and it's another acronym that I will share with you.
You're full of acronyms. You can tell you've worked in business for a long time.
But it's just a good way to tie things together, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this one's called TED, T-E-D.
Okay.
So T stands for tell me. So you could start a conversation with, can you tell me about how you got into business? Or can you tell me about the business that you're in?
Yeah.
Very easy question, but it's an open question, so it's not a yes-no answer at the end. E is explain. So can you explain a little bit more about that? If you don't understand what someone does at work, I remember when I was younger and I'd ask someone, oh, so what do you do? And they'd tell me and I'd think, I have no idea what you mean. I had no idea. So I would then start, can you explain to me, you know, what's your day to day? What does that entail? What's your specialism? So that explain, can you explain, helps you kind of open that a little bit more. And then D is for describe. Can you describe that to me, or you know, can you bring that to life, can you bring that so I've got an image in my head of actually what that does. So there are three just starter words for sentences that can help you ask an open-ended question so that you can get more information back. And it does, keep asking. One thing I always say, and I've stolen this shamelessly from someone else, is to be interesting you have to be interested. By asking lots and lots of questions, you look interested. You are interested, but you come across as being interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a really
people
easy
love to talking about themselves, don't they? So if you can give somebody an open question that gives them free license to talk about themselves, they're going to think that you're a really interesting person because they've had a great time talking about themselves. And you wouldn't believe the number of people who come, I interview for the podcast, you say, I just loved that, Lucy. It was so much fun when I stop the recording. And it's because they've talked about themselves and their specialist knowledge for like nearly an hour. And they just love doing that. It's the same with anybody in conversation.
And that's how you can become better at networking. So if you do go to a networking event and you're rather shy, you know, use those question openers to help you start those conversations. And I had a story when a colleague of mine said when he ever goes networking or to a social engagement with his wife, and his wife, they always say, oh, your wife, she's so interesting. She's so much fun. And actually, the wife has told nothing about herself.
Yeah.
But she asked lots and lots of questions. So she comes back with lots of gossip, then obviously has to relay to her husband. But it's because she has been interested and everyone thinks that she's the life and soul of the party and an interesting person to talk to. But she's given nothing away about herself. Yeah. So it's allow someone to talk about themselves. And they think that you're interesting too.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd say about this is just as you're going about your daily life, like look around the world and see if there are other people to talk to. Like earlier this year, I was out walking in the fields around my village, and usually I have my like podcast stuck in my ears, and I walk past someone and just kind of acknowledge them and keep walking on. And I saw somebody who I barely know from the village, but I took my headphones out and I actually started a conversation with them, and she ended up, as a result of this conversation, buying a copy of my book. So it's when, you know, that was not my intention. That's not why I took their headphones out of my ears. But you never know what's going to come of a conversation if you let it happen. And so be open to having those conversations wherever, when, and whenever, you know, you are really.
And you never know who knows who. So you could be talking to someone who can't help people. You never know what their network is.
Yeah, and I'm just going to refer people back again to that other episode with Barry Jackson, which is episode 3, and he was talking about how Many jobs, I'm not sure of the exact statistic, are not advertised, but people get them through their networks. And I think all this kind of thing about developing these relationships, having these conversations, can lead to opportunities that you would never ever have known existed otherwise.
Yeah, and one thing I completely agree with that is that kind of tip of the iceberg where you always ask, do you know anybody who can
Yes.
before you start advertising a job? So we always kind of say to our students, always have that once you've had a conversation and you may be saying to them, well, I'm looking into sort of getting into X career, then follow it up with, do you know anybody who I may be able to talk to?
Yeah.
And so, get them to think about how you can use their networks.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's just like, have you got a friend of a friend of a friend who might be able to help this and all that kind of thing. Okay, well, it's been fantastic, this conversation, Alex. I've really enjoyed it.
Lovely. You too.
Can you just tell the people listening, they're probably parents, teachers, and students, like how you can help them, what resources you've got on your website, and what you do to help people with this kind of transition from education into the workplace?
Yes, of course. So we are a company called Flying Start XP, and we specialize in that transition from academia into the workplace. So we offer different courses, and they are short courses. They are our longest course is 5 days. They're full on, and we use experiential methods. So that means scenario based learning.
Okay.
It's about
Role
behavior
play.
change. It's behavior change. So by the end of the 5 days, your behavior will have changed into understanding how business works, understanding how you can add value. And a bit more self-awareness and confidence. So there are 5 days, but we're also working a lot now with schools to help them with employability. So if you are a teacher or a parent who would like us to come to your son or daughter's school to offer 1 or 3 day employability courses or our shorter interviewing with impact courses, that's also something that we can do. But I'd love to hear from anybody who's found anything I've said interesting and would like to talk more.
Okay, so how can people get in touch with you? Can you share us where you with us where you are online?
Yes, so our website is flyingstartxp.com. We also have a LinkedIn page, and we have a Twitter account, all using Flying Start XP.
Okay, and I'll link to all those in the show notes so people can find them really easily.
And then I'm Alex Webb. I'm Alex Webb Nay Spring, I think, on LinkedIn if you'd like to get connected to me directly.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Alex. It's been a really, really great conversation. And I'm sure loads of people are going to get real value out of this in terms of thinking of transitioning from the education phase of their life into the kind of earning money phase of their life.
Yeah,
Thank
thank
you
you.
so much for coming on the show today, and goodbye.
Thank you, Lucy. Goodbye.
I really enjoyed that interview with Alex, and I hope you got loads of value out of it. My key takeaway from it, similar to the episode with Barry Jackson, which was episode number 3, which you'll find at lifemoreextraordinary.com/3, is the importance of networks and forming relationships at every single stage of your life, but not just forming them, but maintaining those relationships. And when I do look back on my life and I think about the people who were the most proactive about forming good relationships and also the best at maintaining those relationships, those are the people who I see being the most successful. So when I think back to my days at Cambridge, it was the people who were really proactive about forming relationships with people who were interested in politics, who actually got elected to Parliament. So until the 2015 election, I had two friends from my year group at Cambridge who were members of Parliament. And then there's another guy who I was at university with, who studied geography with me, who was really, really good at forming his network amongst political people of all parties. And he's now a very notable political journalist on the BBC. And when I look back, I can see how they were already taking the footsteps along the career paths that they've followed and are pursuing today. But thinking about also what Alex said about work experience and internships, it's the people who did those kind of things in the summer holidays in the field that they were interested in going into that have had really successful careers in those areas. So I really want you to take that away and start thinking about A, how you can begin and maintain relationships, and secondly, how you can arrange to have paid voluntary or just your standard work experience to help you start seeing where you want to go and start building those relationships actually in the workplace, as well as developing those skills. Okay, since I recorded the podcast, Alex has let me know that on the 3rd and 4th of November, so just after this podcast has been published, this will be published on the 1st of November, Alex is going to be at the National Graduate and Recruitment Fair in Birmingham, and she's going to be delivering a seminar on the importance of having a creative edge in business. So if you're around, if you're going to that event, then I'd highly recommend you look out for Alex and you say hi to her as well. Okay, the last thing I'd like to say is, if you've stuck with me for this long, through 20 episodes and all the way through this episode, I would so appreciate it if you could give the podcast a review and give it a little boost up the iTunes rankings. It's really easy to give a review in your podcast app on an Apple phone. So you just go into the app, you search for the name of the podcast, and this podcast is called The School Success Formula. And then when you see it, if you tap on the main big picture for the podcast, you'll see the reviews tab. If you tap on there, it will give you the option to write a review, and it really would mean the world to me if you took the trouble to spend a couple of minutes writing me a review to let me know what you think and to let the rest of the world know that this is a podcast that is worth listening to. So thank you so much for being a loyal listener. Have a wonderful day and goodbye.